hosts Maya Monell and Aaron Papworth, founders of the Navit Money app, the money management app that uses behavioral science to foster financial wellness. In today's episode, Aaron and I dive into the world of lending, debt, and the cycles of repayment you might be susceptible to if you're not careful. We'll cover the most notorious debt traps, how they form, and how you can be better prepared the next time you consider a loan. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Navit Podcast. I am your co-host, Maya Monell. With me today and every day is our co-host, Aaron Papworth. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, Maya, how are you?
I am doing so well. It is sunny. It is summer. I haven't experienced the effects of COVID yet. Life is happening.
You are not shut down anymore.
I have a puppy at my feet. All is well in the world. So you all missed us for a couple of weeks because Aaron and I were together in person.
Yay!
Somewhat social distancing. It was wonderful. We had a really great time to reconnect and frankly plan out the rest of this podcast season. So we're really excited to continue to bring you great money guests and mentors of ours, as well as dive deeper into some of the maybe more stressful topics of finance and money management. And, you know, as Aaron and I hope to try and do with every episode, make you feel a little bit less stressed about some of the topics that we introduce. So bear with us, because today we're talking about debt traps. You might think you know everything about a debt trap, but I bet within this episode, we will be providing a little bit more detail and frankly, some more intrigue, as when Aaron and I were researching for this episode, there was a lot that we uncovered that we didn't know much about. So we're excited to dive in. Before we get down and dirty into debt traps, Aaron, I know you love history.
You know so I do.
So I was hoping we could take a step back. And why don't you provide us with some origin stories of what a loan is and maybe some lighthearted upside to different types of lending?
Completely. And thank you for making me do this topic, because you know I love this. I love history. And I know, and I think understanding the origin of these things in, that are complicated with money and are scary actually help you see the like where they came from, so you can kind of deal with it more now. So yes, okay, all right. So basically, lending really started, I mean, they have the first kind of inklings of it that's written down in Mesopotamia, so like thousands of years ago, and it's back in, it's so cool. And then it was kind of developed over time, but that at that time, it was really about the farmers, which actually still to this day occurs, right? You have a huge cost at the beginning of your season when you're planting your seeds and doing everything and all the like labor and equipment that you need, but you don't get paid until the harvest and the actual sale of your goods, which could be 9 to 12 months later, right? So lending really started as a way to support the farmers to be able to plant more than just a tiny amount that they could actually cover. Yeah, they could actually achieve. Yeah. And they started to use collateral, which is like a great buzzword in the world of loans, but like they were able to give people that money for the seeds and take something as collateral. So like, for example, mess, this makes me so happy. M-A-S was actually the word in Mesopotamia for calf. So they would take some sort of collateral from something from the farmer that if they didn't pay him back, they would just keep it. And it would be kind of an equivalent amount that they had loaned them. Mess in Hebrew, because the Greeks and the Romans and then, you know, kind of that Mesopotamia area developed it more as they went in terms of like paid early payday loans and things like that. Mess in Hebrew became the word for tax, which is so interesting.
Oh, that is super interesting. So tax at its fundamental is essentially collateral. We certainly think about it some proportionally differently now, but I think that that's actually That's actually really cool. I didn't know that.
It's so cool, right? And at the end of the day, like the so lending in the farming world it still exists today because of the way that whole industry works.
It has to,
right? And it makes so much sense. It's actually how civilizations grew too, because then farmers could grow enough food for more people to live in cities together. I mean, we could geek out forever. And so like, instead of, you know, nomadic people or like very small like city states, you started to have like actual like growth of civilizations, and you see, you know, the Sumerians and the Greeks and the Romans then could congregate in Athens and in city states that became empires. It's like, oh my God, so interesting. It's all about the lending.
Well, and what I love about that too is that helps kind of prompt that second portion of my question, which is, you know, what is the upside? I think we can derive quite a bit of value from realizing that this is how a lot of industries still to this day operate and function. We don't need to see lending necessarily as such a dirty word.
Oh my gosh. I fundamentally believe in the access to credit or lending. Essentially, you know, credit cards, early payday loans, mortgages, all that is in the category of a loan. They're essentially loans. And you know, I could go off on this forever, but I lived in countries where if you don't have access to credit, if you don't have access for, you know, to be able to spend more than you have to be able to invest in maybe the inventory you need for a small business or your crop this year, or the money to pay for a house that you might
not have. It's growing assets, which I think
it's growing an asset. Yeah.
Point. Yeah.
Lending is an incredible thing, and it's really the root of true intergenerational wealth development, because and business and entrepreneurship and everything. So it's lending and loans are an incredible thing. It's just when you get to excessive amounts of interest and kind of illogical returns for the person that's borrowing, that's when it gets really dangerous. And that's when you get debt and this ballooned, you know, and now we're going to get into the debt trap.
And as you always do, you teed me up perfectly for
pitching
a portion of this conversation, which I think is true, right? It's like everything we talk about in finance, you know, there are good, bads, and uglies. And so long as you know what the bads and the uglies and how to avoid the uglies, then you'll be okay. So this is why we wanted to really dive right into debt traps as it relates to lending, because as we will go forward in the show, certainly on our product roadmap, lending is an opportunity that we all want to explore, right? So we want to be able to be as transparent as we can with you all to really tee you up for success and say, this is not something that you need to be afraid of, but let's help make sure that you're optimizing your opportunity to invest in those assets and reap that return.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump right in and let's talk about the structure of debt. Specifically, Erin, why don't you tell our audience what a debt trap truly is?
So the Wikipedia definition, or AKA
you read that thing. Yes. Yeah, you read that thing.
Is a situation in which a borrower is led into a cycle of reborrowing or rollover, and their loan payments because they are unable to afford the scheduled payments on the principal of the loan. So, yeah, that needs explanation. I think you're going to get there, right?
Yeah,
but that's a lot of jargon. But it basically means when someone's at a point where they can never fully repay their loan.
Right.
And
this is where I find this conversation so fascinating, because there are two key points to falling into this trap that can really be detrimental to your financial health. So those two things are high interest rates and the duration of the loan. And so it's important to consider the aspects of a loan or the line of credit, right? And so we're talking about different terms for repayment. We're talking about making sure you understand that you're basically repaying not only the principal, which is the principal amount of the loan that you take out, but also repaying the interest that you accrue over time, because the longer that your loan cycle might be, the more interest you're going to be paying. At that same time, the shorter the duration is, the quicker you're going to have to repay that lump sum back So not to fall into, again, this trap of what Aaron just mentioned, this rollover. So where people really get, I'm going to just use this word all incessantly, I guess, during this episode, but where people get trapped is during that rollover period, where it's basically the lender saying, okay, fine, Aaron, we will forgive the principal amount that you owe, but we're now going to put you on a payment plan to repay the interest that you owe. And then we're going to add interest on top of that too.
It's just like ballooning and ballooning. So like that happens. So just, so let me ask a question. So just like that happens, for example, you've taken out a $5,000 loan in a 3-year term. You get to three. And obviously we actually have a debt calculator in our app that I love so much, because you can actually see you're not just borrowing the 5,000, you're borrowing the 5,000 plus whatever the interest is, you know,
which could be 25-30%.
Yeah, especially in the credit card world. Yeah, you got to be really careful. So let's say actually, you know, at the highest interest rate, you're really borrowing $6,000 and you have to pay it back in 3 years. So when you get to that 3 years and you haven't paid it down, that's when the rollover occurs, right? When banks are like,
Well, no, finish your sentence.
I was going to say, basically, it's obvious you've been paying down, but you haven't been really taking a dent out of the principal.
The principal, exactly.
Right.
That 5,000. And that's where you get in trouble, right? And so, and that's what credit card companies, and we'll get into that in a second, do very well. You're never really addressing the lump sum.
Evilly well.
So Aaron is going to get into credit card debt in a second, because I think as a two-time small business owner, there are ways in which you can manipulate credit, but you also have to be aware of how the system will play out in the end.
Totally. I'm going to get on my high horse in a second, because 25% interest is just evil. But so, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, Aaron. So before we get into that and some of these, I would say, notoriously risky lending opportunities, how do lenders first establish that specific interest rate?
Yes, this is really interesting. I think we have scheduled, since we did our planning for the podcast for the year, we have credit score podcast coming up, because I think it is worth diving into how credit is established and how you are, you know, you achieve that score and how you can do it from an early age. But specifically, you got to think of the bank's perspective. The bank's perspective is, I have this money sitting in my bank, which, thank you, you gave them when you deposited anything into your saving and checking account. Okay, but they're sitting on this money. They want to get a high return on it. And the way that they do that, of course, is lending. The big, the whole thing about 101 on banks is like, the lending is where they make their money. So they need your deposits and then they go lend. So when they're looking at lending, they want to mitigate their risk on losing that money. Like, I could potentially give you that $5,000 for the 3-year term and then you could never pay me back. And like, how do I know, this is the collateral side, how do I know you are the most likely candidate to pay me back? So the credit worthiness is like primary factor. And that's why, you know, a higher score, a credit score means you're probably more likely to get a better interest rate and a better terms, because they see you as more likely to pay them back. If you have a lower credit score, you know, you have, maybe you're kind of, there's some exposure in some other debt, they're going to give you, you're more risky to them. So, which is, it's like the inverse of logic here, but anyways, you're more risky to them. So they will probably give you a worse interest rate, because they think they're taking on more risks, so they better charge you more and maybe worse terms. So it's really complicated.
Thus making you, as the borrower, even less likely, and this
that's
is to your point,
evil,
it's
part
counterintuitive,
of it. Yes.
Less likely to then pay back the loan.
Yes.
Thus further impacting your credit score.
Yes.
Thus ensuring that you will always be trapped in this cycle of debt repayment.
Yes.
Really, I mean, when you think about it, really throughout your life. And this is why the lowest income earners, unfortunately, at least in our country, are those most impacted by debt cycles historically and debt traps, because frankly, there's very little way out. Because to your point in the very beginning, it is very hard to live in a capitalistic society like ours. I'm all for capitalism. We can debate that later. But it's very hard to live in a society like ours without at some point in your life needing a loan to improve your opportunity for asset collection, right?
Totally, 100%. And that's where, like, I mean, yes, the incredible irony is the lower income you are, and this is where we talk about, you know, economic access. The lower income you are, the more likely you are to have worse terms whenever accessing credit. But as we said at the top of this conversation, credit and loans are the key to creating, like, generating wealth. So right. You have shittier terms, you don't have as much access to credit. Ultimately, you can't grow your wealth doing different things at the same rate. And in a competitive capitalistic market, like you said, you're at a significant disadvantage to your competitors. Right. So that's kind of where, you know, we could talk all day about this, but, you know, when we say, hey, people of color or Black people don't have as much access to wealth, or women are considered a more risky investment, and so when we have worse terms, it means when we go into the market, we're competing with someone else who's only paying 10% interest on his loan. And right. he can get more inventory. He can get that he can pay for more staff. He can do more than we can do
because income.
He can net more income because we are burdened by whatever these terms are.
Right.
It's so interesting.
It is fascinating. And I'm going to go off cuff here and ask you a follow-up question to that as somebody who's lived in different types of societies all throughout the world. Have you seen a more opportunistic structure to help level the playing field in terms of lending and debt?
It's a great question. So what I saw that is so interesting in the United, you know, compared to the United States, is I saw systems that didn't have a robust financial structure. They didn't have banks that were willing to lend, mainly, you know, okay, we're really digressing, but
I like it. Our audience is used,
bless you.
Used to this by now. So
yes, let me pontificate for a second.
This is where we can find the financials later.
Wah wah wah.
Yeah.
the financial structure can only exist if you have a robust legal structure. So mm-hmm. That is the key. Like, that is the number one key, because you need to be able to have checks and balances in some way for when a bank loans money. If they can't get that money back from you, there has to be a legal structure in which they can go take the collateral that you put, you know, retrieve that asset somehow, even if it's not the cash that it, maybe they impound your car, whatever. They have some asset now. If you don't have that legal structure, so I lived in a lot of places that didn't have that legal structure. So thus the banking system becomes, it shrinks to only really servicing the super wealthy in the country. And so the right. vast majority of the country is all cash-based society. And, you know, from a cash perspective, you're not ever gaining interest. Like, cash to cash, you're never really able to get ahead because you're not gaining on the percentage, you know, the percentages that you get when you get this interest on a loan, et cetera. So what I saw as an alternative especially for it was middle class workers that had some income, but, like, for example, wanted to open a small business or needed to pay the extra fees for their kid to go to private school. They would do what they called injongis, they would get private people together, like 10, 12 people together, mm-hmm. and each person would put in cash each month so that mm-hmm. there was one big pot. And then that pot went to one person each month. So you would get the big pot on
like internal crowdfunding.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Except that, you know, it's very tight knit. The way it's like, you should have seen the way they manage those things. Like, it's social pressure. You, mm-hmm. you better not be part of an injongi and not put your money in each month. Like, it's incredible the way, because you don't have the legal structure. Yeah. So you like, so me, my, I want my kid to go to private school. I need extra fees in September. I take the pot in September, but one of my colleagues who, you know, needs to buy their inventory for their market in December takes it in December, and, you know, you just pay it out.
It's kind of more, it's less lending, more like insurance when you think of it.
Yeah.
Because you're contributing to money, you're contributing to a money pot every month, right?
Yeah.
And then when you need it is there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is there at a, at a more significant amount than what you've contributed alone.
Totally. And the thing that's so that like, it's a perfect way for access to capital to shift in a cash-based society, but it still doesn't give anyone a rate of return. That's where it's, you know, kind of sad. It's just the same money being cycled over. It's just, you get a big pot and hopefully you can make something with it. But it's a really, it's a really interesting, peer-to-peer lending is a whole interesting world that I think is even developing in the United States.
Definitely.
But yes.
Okay. Well,
thank you for the tangent.
I'll reel a second. No, I'm glad we covered that because again, it's a helpful break, I think, to us all, because this can be a rather robust topic to cover. So we talked about interest rates. We talked about how interest can be allocated based on your credit score. And so one of my favorite, one of the most fascinating topics within the debt trap system in my mind is these terms, right? So I spoke a little bit at the beginning between long and the short term. And something that I think a lot of people forget, right? We all kind of have maybe heard at some point or another that the longer the term, the more interest, like that logically makes sense, right? Where the more interest you accrue, like the more you have to pay back, blah, blah, blah.
Like the 15 versus the 30-year mortgage.
Right. Or even like, and I'm going to get into car lending in a minute here, but even if you take a loan out on a car, a lot of, at least Americans, are taking out longer terms for that loan. And that's just getting crushed by compounded interest. So that leads me into the inverse of short repayment terms. And short repayment terms are interesting and almost more obvious, but I think less people think of them as such because you often pay them within 30 days. So you have to pay. So this is, and we'll get into early payday, but you basically have to pay off some lump sum of, well, you have to pay off the principal and the interest that comes with that principal in a month's window.
I mean, it's incredible.
That is illogical because logically you need access to money 1 month. What is going to happen to you in those 30 days other than you sell your house and you get, you know, the value of your house or you sell off some other asset? It's very unlikely, is my point, that you're going to be able to pay off the principal and the interest in 30 days. So what happens then in that short-term cycle, you have to pay off, as I've now stated, what they call lump sum repayment. So that's, again, kind of the obvious component of this. You pay off the whole thing at that window. Now, like most people, if you cannot pay off the principal and the interest that has accrued in that 30-day cycle, you now have this concept of a loan rollover. And so again, I spoke a little bit to this, but to just dive deeper into it for a second and bear with me, that means that the lender forgives the principal and says, okay, Aaron, you're just going to pay off the interest that has amassed in this period of time, but then you're also paying interest on the interest.
Yeah.
And so this is where most people in short-term loan situations, say that early payday loan, actually end up paying almost 200 days until the loan is paid off. So they end up paying almost a complete year of loan repayments for just one short-term loan.
It's, and I'm sure, and what percentage more do they pay with the interest on the interest? I mean,
interest has got to be like 30, 35%.
Yeah.
Okay. So they end up paying like over an APR. So if we look at that, like a payday loan APR, right? And we can dive right into this. But a payday loan is a very, I should stop saying obvious because I don't even think it was obvious when I was doing this research, but a payday loan is a very good example of a short-term loan where you ask for a 3-day cash advance, right? They backdate the note and you then have to pay off the principal and the interest. Now, the interest could generally range from $15 per every $100 borrowed. But again, it's typically within the 14-day window. So how likely are you to really repay the principal and the interest in that amount of time? And so what that basically compounds into is an APR of 390%. So that's, yeah, interest of 390%.
It's so evil. Over a year. You know what's even more evil is if you understand, like, you have to go to why are they willing to pay, to drop the principal? It's because they get to write it off. This is what's so even more evil about it. So they say, oh, yeah, you can't pay. No problem. We'll forgive the principal. But all that interest, we're going to keep making you pay. But at the end of the day, they have taken a tax deduction about with the amount that you didn't pay back. They then get it deducted. So they actually do get it paid back because they're reducing the amount they're paying in tax.
Paying taxes.
And you're paying all this interest. It's just like, oh my God.
It's totally shocking. Okay, so the last thing I'll say about payday loans, because this was a stat that really made me kind of jump at the page. 75% of payday loans come from rollovers. So 75% of all lenders make their money on those loans that have rolled over into this interest lump of debt trapping.
Wait, what? Wait, 75% of payday loans.
75% of payday loans, like 75% of all payday lending institutions make the majority of their money just from rollovers. They're not making, like you just said, they're not making money on the actual loan that they're giving out.
Yeah.
They're making money on all of that interest.
Of course. And if this you're at 390%.
It's just shocking. And so this is where the average borrower stays in debt for 212 days from one, maybe $100 loan in their year.
It's incredible.
Crazy.
Do they also, we didn't even talk about this, but do they also add the fees on there? Because the other way they get you.
Of course.
Are fees. So your late payment, you get a fee,
pay off overdrafting. It's the exact same thing. So, okay. So I've kind of dove into payday loans, but we are now going to kind of turn to the common types of loans that can lead us into these traps. So we talked about payday loans because those were, again, the best example of the short term. So obviously evil. But now we're going to turn to Aaron's favorite topic, which is around credit and credit cards. So Aaron, how do we get into a debt trap around credit cards?
Oh, dear, credit cards. Yes. Okay. So credit cards, like we said before, it's an advance. Credit cards do two things. They give you access to a payment structure that isn't your cash in your bank account. So it can be useful, especially things like paying online. Everyone says, you should use credit cards paying online because of fraud more than you should use your bank account, which I would like to go on the record and say the same laws apply to both credit card fraud and banking, checking account fraud. If someone gets your number, your credit card number, and makes a fraudulent payment, you go and you challenge it. You say, hey, whoa, that didn't happen. And then the money is credited back to your account really easily. The credit card systems are notoriously great at that. The beauty of that is that it's not actually your money that has been, stolen or used in some nefarious way. It's the credit cards company. And so it's really not, it's no real skin off your back if you catch it. The problem, the same legally, banks and credit checking accounts have to do the same thing. You say, hey, someone got my checking account. They made some fraudulent thing. They have to do the same thing. They have to reimburse you. They will investigate it. The problem is that it's your cash that has gone out of your bank account. So you're out the $100, let's say, until they have settled that account. And usually it's, 4 to 6 weeks before you get that mm-hmm. money back. So that's the same laws apply, but that's why people say, hey, use credit cards when you're paying online. So that's one, you're kind of protected from fraud in some ways. And then the other is that, there are periods of time, for example, a small business owner who you need to float an expense before you are paid. So credit cards have been notorious for being able to help people pay invoices or, rent or whatever before you get paid with the idea that you just pay it back. The problem comes, so it's not a bad thing, a line of credit isn't bad. The evil part comes when the interest that you are being charged every time you don't pay off that balance is 20-25%, because now all of a sudden that's compounding, and over time the debt trap is so, you get over, you know, 10-15% interest and you are just immediately in a, like the possibility that you get into debt trap is profound. Because if you think about that, it's 120, it's 100 on, then it's 120, then it's 150, then it's 175, it's 200 within a couple months. You're now paying double what you were paying, literally 4 months, you're paying double whatever you initially paid. And often people can't afford that. So that's, mm-hmm. that's like the huge problem, the interest. The final point is, I think there is something disingenuous that has not been fully educated to our population of minimum payments. So it's really sneaky that you can have this $5,000 balance and you're still okay. Like, you don't get fees. You don't, you know, like they say, you're okay. Your credit isn't too affected mm-hmm. if you pay the minimum payment every month. So people just, okay, $5,000, now I'll pay my $38 a month. But by doing that, they are able to compound that balance every month over time. So it's like, really what you should be doing is use the credit card for the fraud protection and the access, but pay off the entire balance each month. So they're never charging you 1 month of interest and they're not charging you fees, you know, for that. Right. So it's a crazy feature of our financial system.
Totally. And I think that this is, and we're going to conclude with how to prevent some of these risks and how to think a little bit differently about lending. And I think one of the keynotes there is being able to pay, maybe you do just use your credit card for online payments that are, you know, your variable expenses, right? And you try and use your primary banking or checking account for all of your fixed expenses in the year. And that way you're actually spending less on your credit card. Think of it more like a budget rather than, I mean, I remember when we were kids, we used to be like, oh, we can't have a credit card because it's like free money. You know, it's like Venmo, right? It's like this artificial thing that lives out in the universe that you probably have to pay off later. Like, that's how a lot of, I think, especially younger spenders think of it. So the last one that I want to touch on of kind of these common debt traps that you can really fall into really without knowing is car title loans. Now, I will admit, this was the one I knew least about when we went out to research, though it makes the most sense, because back to, 2000, what was it, like 2000 years ago in Mesopotamia, Aaron?
Yes.
Borrowers would need collateral. So this is another great example of one of the shorter term loans, but car title loans are actually rather prevalent, especially in our country. And it's basically a cash loan that uses the borrower's car as collateral. So majority of Americans have to drive places. Majority of Americans have cars, right? And this basically just uses that as a like loan dependency, right? So the lender is saying, for the value of your vehicle, we will give you that amount in a loan. And if you can't pay it down, again, with interest. So it's really not just the principal that you're taking. You have to make sure you factor in the interest for that lump sum of whatever your car's value is. But here's the kicker. Most lenders will typically only offer you up to 50%. It's like, I found it's between 25% and 50% of your vehicle's actual worth. And if that, if they repossess your car at the end of this long scheme, you don't get the full value of the car. So you could actually still be out in money. You're still only getting 50% or up to 50% of your car's value. And that was another really interesting thing about this one, was the average interest rate here is around 25%. And typical loan terms are 30 days. So 50% of your car's value, no matter what car you have, it's definitely in the $10,000 range and up, right?
Yeah.
You're expected to pay at least that much plus interest in 30 days, meaning that, of course, just like early payday loans, these kinds of lenders and these loans often actually make their money on rollovers. And the last point I'll make, 1 in 5 borrowers end up having their car repossessed at the end of the day. So not only are you left trying to figure out how to pay more interest, your car is repossessed and you're net negative on your assets.
So just so I'm clear, people seek out these car title loans when they need cash. This is not typically when you're going to buy a car, like, cause you get car loans, you know.
So there's two different, and that's when I spoke in the beginning of like most Americans are getting longer term loans for a car loan.
Right.
This is the opposite. This is saying, I have a car, I need cash, use collateral.
Got it. Use my car as a collateral.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's preying on people that are vulnerable, and it's amazing to me that our system allows these things to happen. I will say there are some people that are trying to solve that early payday loan.
Totally.
Like some regulations are being pushed, and there's some fintechs that are trying to do cash advances without these fees. So it's not all bad. And if you guys have questions about us, we will put in the show notes, like email us and we can tell you more about who we think are good fintechs that are doing that. But yeah, it's just evil.
Definitely. So reeling us back in, I think this was a really we're excited to do this episode because we thought it was a really valuable one to start to have this conversation with you all around the different forms of lending and to really show you the upfront cost, right? The upfront debt trap and the upfront like worst case scenario so that we can start to talk about all your opportunities around lending and growing asset wealth, right, over time. So we talked about, you know, these kind of traditional types of debt traps and payday loans, credit cards, car titles. You can lump in overdraft fees in that one too. And so now I really want to conclude, Erin, of, you know, what I'm just going to say it frankly, what the hell can we do about debt traps and how can we avoid them?
Completely. And, you know, we want to honor the fact that there are a lot of people that need cash advance and are living paycheck to paycheck. And right now with COVID-19, unemployment is at an all time high. So these things are really important to talk about right now because there are a lot of people that are in this situation of like figuring out what they do next. Right. So I think knowing the risk and doing your homework are the two most important things that you can do in this situation. If you are in a place where you need cash quickly, doing your research, not just kind of defaulting to what's around the corner or what's easy, but looking for solutions that are out there, especially online and in fintech, for me is a huge, like people are trying to solve this problem. It's not pretty at all. And, but options exist. So that's one. And then knowing the risk of always calculating if you're going to take a loan, what your actual total is that you're going to spend. So for example, you're taking the $5,000 for a car and you got to calculate that interest on it to understand, okay, you're actually going to pay $6,000 over time. And so understand, those two, like knowing the risk, doing your research and finding alternative ways to fund what you need to fund is, there are a lot right now, there are a lot of employer support programs right now that are trying to help people save or give people kind of advances on their salaries, early payday. If you need that from an employer, asking them if they've heard about some of these programs is really helpful. I think people are trying to solve, like I said, like the government's going to come in with some of another stimulus package, hopefully, if they can get it through and get through. So like there's a lot going on out there and the very, very last resort should be any of these, especially the payday and the car title. Credit cards, again, the other thing you can do with credit cards is you can call your credit card company and try and negotiate your rate. So if you, for example, let's say you've been consistent with your payments and it's at a high, you're at 25% APR, you could A, call them and because there's a lot of competition out there, you could call them and say, I'm going to switch providers. So can you give me a better rate? You can consolidate your debt into a lower interest loan to try and get that interest off your books. And, consistently repaying really does make you, even if it's a minimum payment, it makes you a better, more credit worthy when you go to like even a bank for a personal loan, et cetera. So yeah, you got to know your research and like do your research and understand all your options and don't default to what seems easiest.
I love it. So know the risks, do your research, understand those rates and terms. And then one other thing I wanted to say, because I know that this is really prevalent, Erin's sitting there with her Peloton, and I don't know how she financed it, but she might have done it this way. There are a lot of now really fintechs, but brands online that allow you to buy the thing now and pay it later. But please remember that those all come with interest, and you end up most of the time spending more than if you had the money up front. So maybe you download Navit and instead try to save for that purchase and buy the thing outright, because you will end up saving in the end. So obviously I'm going to do our shameless plug in. And at the end of the day, you know, as we always say, no, you're not alone. These are such common traits of the banking, lending, debt world. And there are also millions of answers and millions of resources out there to help you pay these things down and get you out of this cycle and trap of debt. So I hope this wasn't too doom and gloom for everybody listening. We will brighten up your day with more episodes in the future. We'll definitely dive into credit here shortly. But until then, I hope everybody stays well. And thank you so much for listening. And Erin, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Maya. Thanks, everyone.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Care to continue the convo? You can connect with fellow navigators in the app or on our Let's Navit Facebook page. Oh, and be sure to get social with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Let's Navit. That's LetsNavit. And finally, wherever you're listening to this podcast, it would really help us if you would take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. That's it for today's episode. Until next time,
Let's Navit!